Hey, everybody. Welcome to Therapy Rocks, a personal growth podcast. I'm your host, Signa Darpinian, co-author of No Way and Raising Body Positive Teens, both with Jessica Kingsley Publishers in London. I'm happy to have my co-author, Wendy Sterling, back in the studio with us today. Wendy is going to talk about her most recent book, How to Nourish Yourself Through an Eating Disorder. She's going to give us some insights into how she makes her writing routine work while raising a family and working full-time, and the benefits of writing with co-authors. Wendy is a registered dietitian with a Master's of Science in Nutrition Education from Teachers College, Columbia University. She is a certified eating disorder specialist and approved supervisor through the International Association of Eating Disorder Professionals. Wendy is also a board-certified specialist in sports dietetics. She has consulted for the Oakland Athletics, Golden State Warriors, New York Jets, and New York Islanders. She is the co-author of two eating disorder books, How to Nourish Your Child Through an Eating Disorder and How to Nourish Yourself Through an Eating Disorder, as well as two preventative books, No Way and Raising Body Positive Teens. Wendy maintains a private practice in the San Francisco Bay Area and is also seeing patients virtually throughout the country. Wendy, thank you for coming back in.
Thank you for having me, Signa.
I thought we'd get started today by talking about what inspired you to write a book in the first place.
Yeah, this really happened for us very naturally. I was working at the Healthy Teen Project in Los Altos with one of my other co-authors, Casey Crosby, and it was there that I discovered what would become the plate-by-plate approach, which is a no-numbers, no-counting, no-measuring approach to help feed people in the recovery and treatment of eating disorders. I had come from a more numbers-based approach in New York, using an exchange-based program, and was really just blown away by the concept of just using a plate in the eating disorder treatment recovery, where a plate is a plate from the beginning to the middle to the end of recovery. And I said to Casey at one point, gosh, this is amazing. We've got to share this with the world. Let's publish this. And we began to draft a proposal and figure out how to get into the world of publishing, and we were making our way through that when you entered the picture, and shortly into that process asked me if I would be the dietitian co-author on a book you were working on. You had already recruited Shelley Agarwal, the medical co-author, and I said to you, hey, I'm pretty into this other book I'm writing. I don't think I can do it. And then you asked again, and I kind of said no. And then you if anyone knows Signa, those that are out there, she's very, very persistent. And needless to say, even though I was working full time and consulting at a sports team and a mom and working on this book, I said yes eventually to this other book called No Way. And I basically birthed twins in 2018. And I wouldn't have wished it for myself, but it's certainly, it was a blessing and a dream as well. But it was quite intense. Both books published within a week of each other. And it was a really exciting time.
See, I remember it a little bit differently because I don't remember talking you into it a second time. I just remember thinking, like, you're not going to get in my head, thinking you're not going to get out of this room without being the dietitian co-author for this book. And I remember saying something along the lines of, oh, no, like, I'll do it all. You won't really have to do anything. Yeah, which I was just doing, saying whatever I could to get out of there.
Yeah. And the reality is that is kind of what you said. I remember you saying something like, oh, there'll be three of us. You know, you'll just have to do the nutrition piece. It won't be that much. We'll divide up the work. But if anyone ever has worked as a co-author, once you're putting your name on a book, you know, there's no such thing as only this is your piece. You are certainly responsible for the book in its entirety. And that is basically how it goes.
And I actually remember the first time that I saw you speak. I think you were part of three speakers that we had speak for IADEP. And you were doing the dietitian piece and presenting at the time what was called the female athlete triad. And now it's called relative energy deficiency in sport. And after I saw you speak, in my head, I was like, I want that one. I want her. Anyway. Yeah. So fun beginnings. I have a question about the plate by plate approach. Are you saying that you and Casey came up with the approach? How did you come up with the approach?
Yeah, so a plate method is nothing new. The USDA has the MyPlate, for example, but that is not a method that's being used in eating disorder treatment. For example, they use low-fat products and, you know, it's really meant to treat "quote unquote overweight or weight management," and there's other methods in terms of using a plate. This was a visual plate that Stanford was actually using on their inpatient unit, and what Casey and I did was just sort of developed it a little further to include fighting back against food fears and incorporating variety, and you know, just basically built it out even further.
And so after you developed the plate-by-plate approach, that is what naturally led to the first book with Casey?
That's right. And at the time, we weren't really sure if we were going to publish the plate-by-plate approach for parents to help fight back against their kids' eating disorder using family-based treatment, or if we were going to publish it at first for the client. We knew at the very beginning in, let's say, 2017, that it was important for both, and at some point we were going to publish both. But ultimately we decided to publish first the book for parents, and that's what we did, How to Nourish Your Child Through an Eating Disorder. And then this year we finally got to publish the book for the adults, How to Nourish Yourself Through an Eating Disorder, which fundamentally uses the plate-by-plate approach to help clients with anorexia, bulimia, binge eating disorder, any kind of disordered eating, to use this plate-by-plate approach to also fight back against food fears, food rules, et cetera.
I imagine that there are a lot of people out there who have a book in them. What would you suggest to the audience as a first step to getting picked up by a publishing house?
Well, I'm not exactly an expert at publishing books, but all I know is what I've done. And here's what I did. I basically looked at all the books in my industry to see who published their books. And then I kind of collected a list of those publishing houses and then went to their website to see what are the submission requirements. Some of those publishing houses required an agent. We did not have an agent. Some of them did not require an agent, and for the ones that did not require an agent, we sent a proposal, and we followed their guidelines. And their guidelines basically, you know, some are long, some are short. You basically write up your table of contents and descriptions of your chapters, and for some of these submissions, they want to see a sample chapter or two. I think often authors or potential authors think they've got to write the whole book. But in our cases, that has never been the case. I don't know if the publishing houses actually want to read full books, at least for our industry.
Yeah, and I actually remember doing a similar thing, just looking at the back of each book that I was reading that was more in the prevention of eating disorders category, and then looking them up to see if they required an agent. And I can't remember exactly, but I feel like I was submitting about one or two to different publishing houses a week, which takes quite a bit of time.
it does take a long time, and it's almost like applying to college. Like, you have this big, long list. Maybe it's even more daunting. I don't know. I mean, you know, everybody says you don't expect to get picked up. It's very unlikely. I mean, it feels like doom and gloom. But we were really lucky to get picked up, both with First No Way and then again with How to Nourish Your Child Through an Eating Disorder. No Way is by Jessica Kingsley Publishers in London, and then How to Nourish and the subsequent new one by The Experiment in New York.
Okay, so any other interesting experiences about the publishing process?
You know, not really. I mean, I remember with The Experiment, just there was a couple of key moments. So for example, with our first book, How to Nourish a Child Through an Eating Disorder, I remember as we were going back and forth and getting an interview, I just happened to be in New York when they asked us for an interview. So instead of it being a phone interview, I went in person to the interview. And that was actually really fun and nerve-wracking. It was a room full of, you know, everybody there. I don't know. I don't even know who was there, but there was a lot of people there, and they were really grilling us about the approach, about why this approach, why is this unique? And what's interesting too is that you're also explaining treatment of eating disorders to a room full of people that may not know much about eating disorders. And so that was really, really my first taste of having to defend the approach, why the approach, kind of selling it, convincing people who really didn't know much about it. And they made it clear that just because I was there doesn't mean they were necessarily interested, or and also how difficult it was to get picked up. And we were thrilled eventually when they said yes and gave us an offer. So we were jumping up and down, and we really, really wanted this most recent book to get published, the one for adults, How to Nourish Yourself Through an Eating Disorder. Many, many people along the way after we published our first one had asked us, what about a book for adults? You know, do you have anything? And we were asking the publishing house, how about this next book? And it really did take, you know, probably 3 or 4 years of kind of convincing them to kind of do that. Not that we had to actively convince them, but just perhaps when the timing was right for the publishing house, for us, for everybody to kind of get this next book out.
Wendy, your new book is for adults. How do you get somebody to want to recover?
Well, a lot of times, as we say in our book, people are sick and tired of being sick and tired. And so typically people are turning to this book because they perhaps have tried many other kinds of treatment or any other kinds of programs, and they're really looking for a way to find relief from their disorder and to learn to really fight back against these food rules that have really held them hostage for so long. And we really think our book offers a path for that. Plus, there are many obstacles that get in the way of recovery that tend to hold people back. And so we've written this book like a guidebook to our clients in a very similar way that we do in session with our patients. So we'll take them through a questionnaire to ask them about their food patterns, their hydration, their caffeine, their supplements, plus their food rules and also their barriers. And we provide information about overcoming these obstacles such as nausea, constipation, bloating, gastroparesis, lack of motivation. And we've also recruited a medical doctor to talk about medical expertise, Leslie Williams, who is fantastic, and Nan Shaw, who's really an amazing therapist. She wrote the FBT chapter in our first book, but really loves young adults and adults, the work there, and wrote the therapy chapter in this book too.
Okay. Yeah. And I love it. I can imagine if I had an individual adult client, and I like the idea of like being in session, it's cool because, you know, the talk therapy part of it is helpful. You're processing whatever's going on and whatever you've become aware of that particular week. And then I always like the idea of also having a little bit of homework outside of session. So to have them be focusing on a chapter, for example, to be reading and like a chapter to be reading to increase the support outside of session and also increase the support around your piece as the dietitian. I just like that it gets more well integrated that way.
Definitely. And eating disorder treatment is so multifaceted, which I think made writing this book so challenging. Yes, we offer the plate-by-plate approach, and that is why we wanted to write the book. But, you know, Casey and I, when we're working with patients, it's not just the food. It's the medical piece. It's the therapy piece. It's the exercise piece. We have a whole chapter on dysfunctional movement and compulsive movement. It's also the food rules. How do we just tell someone what to have on a plate without talking about addressing and fighting back food rules? And then how do we also do all this without addressing body image? So the book really encompasses all of these different aspects. And needless to say, the publishers were not thrilled when we handed in our first draft and we're 40,000 words over. So we had a lot of cutting and a lot of editing to do. We had so much text, just so much.
It's interesting because for me, being a therapist who does a lot of cognitive behavioral work, I know from working so closely with you over the years that unless somebody is eating in a way that you call the ABCs, unless someone is eating adequately is A, let's see if I can get this right, yep. Balance is B, meaning it's all there, and then consistent is C. Okay, so
beautiful, Signe. Right? I'm very impressed.
I know. ABCs. And so what's interesting is that for somebody who does cognitive behavioral work, it's really hard for clients to apply what they know and do that cognitive work, which, as a reminder, cognitions are thoughts. Cognition is reasoning. And so if somebody is not eating in an ABC sort of way, it's hard for them to do that cognitive work.
Absolutely. And same goes, of course, for body image.
Right.
Sleep can be disrupted. You know, the medical vital signs are all, you know, dysregulated as well. So all of that is absolutely true. And that's why just getting on a consistent and regular schedule is so important and the foundation of what our plate-by-plate approach is trying to help both adults and kids.
Getting someone to eat or making sure as the therapist that somebody's eating in an ABCs kind of way is important for the therapy work, regardless of whether or not somebody has a clinical eating disorder.
Very important, because I think a lot of people don't seek treatment because they don't think they are quote unquote sick enough. And the reality is that even if food is slightly off, it can have really serious ramifications. And sometimes people go see the doctor and they may not even have vital signs or lab work that is abnormal, yet the food is dysregulated and disruptive. And so it's very true that not eating adequately, not eating in a balanced way, not eating consistently really can alter somebody's brain function, somebody's gut function. We know there's a huge gut-brain connection. And so, it's really fundamental to being able to be productive therapeutically.
And so the way that I think of it now is like I am not having conversations, or I wouldn't be having a conversation about somebody's mental health without their food having a seat at the table, as well as their sleep having a seat at the table.
Absolutely.
It's so foundational, and it kind of feels those two especially feel like the domino that hits all of the other ones.
Absolutely.
Can you say a little more about the plate approach and what that plate might look like and, you know, kind of an example of debunking some of the diet rules that you spoke about?
Yeah, our plate approach fundamentally is that all five food groups need to be present on the plate and that the plate needs to be full. And we have two different types of plates based on each person's unique nutritional needs, which vary based on a variety of different factors: age, biological sex, exercise, which includes intensity, duration, and frequency, and a variety of different factors. And so in our book, we take the reader through which plate might be best for you. How do you know your plate is working? But fundamentally on that plate, it really is important because to have all those food groups, because carbohydrates are giving you the energy to fuel your brain, to fuel your muscles. Protein is giving you some fullness and important for enzymatic function. Fruits and vegetables are helpful to keep your bowel moving, but they also provide really important vitamins and minerals and antioxidants. And, you know, fats are really important too. And sometimes I see people avoidant of fats as well. Yet fats are really fundamental for hormone production, which includes testosterone and estrogen, both really important for bone health as well, for females, for them to get regular and consistent periods. Fats also are a precursor for vitamin D, which you need for absorption of calcium. Without enough vitamin D, you can't get in your calcium and get it integrated into the bone. Vitamin D is a fat-soluble vitamin. So, you know, we need all of that. And plus calcium and dairy is part of that plate as well. And for those that can't tolerate dairy, it can be something that is a dairy alternative. I prefer the ones that are a dairy alternative that also contain protein, like soy or pea protein or fortified flax milk that contains protein. That way you're also getting calcium and protein. So the idea is that you're getting all of your nutrients on the plate and you're getting them together. And, you know, sometimes you're not going to be able to get in the calcium, let's say. Let's say you're at a Japanese restaurant. You know, most likely the Japanese restaurant is not going to serve you a glass of milk. So in that case, we make recommendations, as we describe in the book and certainly also on our Instagram, to add another food group just to make sure the volume, is enough at that time. It doesn't replace your calcium at that time, but we want to make sure that the consistency of your volume that you're consuming is enough so that you don't fall short, that you're not hungry later, and that you're able to walk away from that meal feeling satisfied.
While we're on that, how many hours should that plate leave you sated?
Typically, we recommend meals every, let's say, 2 to 3 hours, with the idea that you're having breakfast, lunch, snack, dinner, snack. That's 2 snacks, but many of our clients need 3 snacks. Many need 4 snacks. It won't surprise you that number of snacks and volume of snacks also will vary by person.
I don't think it's uncommon for people to think that they can go like 5 hours in between meals when the ABCs aren't even there to begin with.
I think a lot of people don't think they need snacks. I get that question a lot. Do I really need snacks? And one thing that's really interesting about snacks is that actually everyone needs snacks, you know, from the 3-year-old toddler to the 13-year-old adolescent to the 65-year-old to the non-athlete to the violin player. It's like, you know, any person I can think of really does require some kind of mid-meal option in between lunch and dinner, mostly because it'll help with blood sugar, it'll help with metabolism regulation, it'll help with energy and mood and a whole lot of other benefits. And certainly if you're an athlete, it really helps with a pre-workout option, a post-workout option. And so we really think snacks are beneficial for almost everyone. And of course, everybody's plates and plans and styles are unique and different, but in general, that is, you know, how we believe.
I think that there's so much diet culture that we're exposed to that it's hard for people to recognize that they need as much food as they do. I think a lot of people are eating under their metabolic rate, thinking that that's okay.
We see that a lot. And I think what we also see is then people bypassing their body's natural stopping place at other points in the day. And so they might cut out breakfast, they might not eat a snack, and then they come back from work or they come back from school, and then they find that maybe their appetite is catching up with them, and then they might have more of a draw towards things like sugar or cookies, and then they're blaming the cookies and they're blaming some of the high sugar foods, when really, if they were eating more regularly and consistently and not afraid to actually say yes to a full breakfast or the volume of breakfast that perhaps I'm recommending, a lot of times they can be more in touch with their hunger and fullness. And so we try to teach, you know, hey, let's not be afraid to have your meals and to put in snacks where they belong. And then let's see what happens later on in the evening. Of course, we know that sometimes people may be binging for other reasons other that have nothing to do with food. But in my practice, I do tend to see a lot of people who might be missing an afternoon snack and then come home with really, really high hunger levels, or they might be working out and just haven't recovered sufficiently from their sport. They haven't nutritionally recovered. So we want to make sure that if somebody feels dysregulated with food, that perhaps they are checking in with a registered dietitian so they can just get a sense of what's happening physiologically to make sure that their body's getting what it needs.
And what I learned from you is that, let's say that they're overly responding to the sweets later in the evening, I learned that that makes sense intuitively because sugar is the quickest source of energy.
Yes, I love that. It's a really interesting concept.
It's amazing,
isn't it?
How intuitive the body is.
Yes, the body wants to get renourished.
Okay, so Wendy, while you were in your writing routine, how do you do that with a full caseload, with a family? What does it look like? When do you write?
Yeah, it's tricky. I can tell you that I love it. I mean, I really, really love it. And when I'm in the writing process, and let's just talk about this most recent book because it's most fresh on my mind, it is completely immersive. Like, I will be dreaming about the book. I'll wake up thinking about a chapter. I'll be mid-conversation and then like something will come into my mind. I mean, it's kind of, it's not great. I'm very distracted. It almost reminds me of, like, I've heard documentaries about artists and, you know, when they're kind of creating their work. And I don't mean to create, you know, compare myself to like an artist. Gosh, I'm just like, you know, but it's like your brain is on overdrive thinking about these very different topics, like from exercise to food rules to plates to calcium to protein. Like, there's so much funneling through my brain that and then you really want to make sure you've hit it all, that you've thought about it all, that you've thought about all the casework you've had, interactions you've had. It is so cathartic and it really just flows that I just try to find chunks of time when I can. I'm fortunate that I'm not in session every day, so I was able to write sometimes during the day, sometimes on the weekend, sometimes at night. But I really try to, for the most part, set boundaries to shut it off when I'm with my family and really only try to grab some time when I had time to myself and alone. Otherwise, they'd really hate me.
So it's not like, oh, I write for 2 hours a day. It's more like you try to find the time when you can, when it's available.
Yeah, I think there would be days where I have, you know, I'd find that I have hours free and then I would write for hours. But I try to do that if I could during the day, or if I found I had a night free. I would love to write it. Like, for example, if I found I had a night free, I'd love to write. I would have preferred to be writing than like watching a TV show. It was so fun to write and to get it all out on paper. It felt great.
Can you give examples of what kinds of things would inspire you for different segments in the book?
It just sort of would happen naturally, whether it would be from a webinar I went to or a book I read or something a client would say. I mean, my sessions with clients were rich with information constantly, whether it was something about how they phrased something or what they said. You know, there were a lot of things where I was like, oh, this is a really good point. We should really make sure the reader knows about I don't know, something, you know, and I would just jot it down and make sure that we included it somewhere. But that happened a million times. It happened so often throughout the process. It was like almost exhausting. At some point I'm like, okay, I've got to stop. I can't keep writing, you know, including every detail.
I remember feeling similarly.
Definitely.
What about, do you have a favorite place that you, when you would find the time to write, a favorite place to write?
I wrote anywhere I could. I would write in my office. I'd write in bed. I'd write anywhere in my house. I mean, it was me and my laptop constantly. And, you know, just if I was waiting for an appointment, I mean, anywhere I could get it in, I just was kind of writing.
I find it interesting, I'm sure you would agree, that while writing a book and organizing thoughts, you know, putting them into different chapters, I feel like it made me a better therapist, and it also made me a better public speaker.
It does help you to clarify in an incredibly detailed way exactly what you want to say with the fewest words possible as you are creating your text. And it also, like, we added charts and graphs and case studies and things that, you know, we now use in our practice. And so we have handouts that have come from our book, which you can get on our website. And we have graphs and charts that I think only happened because we were writing this book. And so I think that's been really a nice side benefit. You know, like how I think about constipation, I've always thought about constipation this way. But when we were writing it in our book, you know, we were able to write a really detailed chart about fiber, fluids, calories and fats and why those things are really important. And so there's a really nice chart there that I think the reader will find beneficial.
That's exactly what I was trying to say. It helps to clarify. I love that. Okay, so what about co-authors? For starters, I imagine that the listeners would be really curious to know, out of your three co-authors, who's your favorite?
Why am I not surprised that you are asking this question? Well, Signa, that question's like asking a parent who their favorite child is. Let's just say this. I have many different co-authors. Casey Crosby is my dietitian co-author. Shelly Agarwal is my medical doctor co-author. And you are my therapist co-author. And as I'm saying this, Signa's raising her hand and saying, choose me, choose me. So here's what I'll say, Signa. You are my favorite therapist co-author. And this kind of reminds me of when my kids were little and I would say to them, you know, Lexi, you are my favorite six-year-old. And Emily, you are my favorite eight-year-old. And I'd have to give them each a favorite designation.
Most boring answer ever.
Okay, I nailed it. I totally nailed that one.
What about the benefits of having co-authors?
Having co-authors was amazing. We had such a blast. I will say that in 2018, when I wrote two books at the same time, I wasn't really having much fun. So the fun really started when we were writing Raising Body Positive Teens. And me, you, and Dr. Agarwal, Shelley, were writing together. I mean, I would say that was the best. It just made the process so much fun. For, you know, the obvious thing, too, is most likely we're writing less, but to have three different perspectives and three different lived experiences coming to the table, you know, Shelley's a doctor, you're a therapist, I'm a dietitian, like to bring all of that into one really powerful book for the reader. But it also made it really fun. I mean, we were laughing the whole time. I mean, my kids I put them to bed and, you know, they would say to me, so, you know, what jokes is Signa trying to sneak in tonight?
They weren't jokes. They were real things that I wanted in the book.
Yeah, they were not funny. They were not funny. So, I mean, maybe a little funny. They were funny that they were not funny.
And what's funny is some of them made it in because nobody wants to read their book once it's out. And so some of them actually made it in. That's the funniest.
Yes.
Well, Wendy, thank you so much for coming back here. And I got to say, you did it again. You've adapted the plate-by-plate approach for adults and provided a much-needed support for both community and health professionals. And thank you for giving us a sneak peek into your writing process as well.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been so fun.
Thank you for joining us today for another episode of Therapy Rocks. Reminder that you can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. We'll see you in the new year.